Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
It's a Thursday. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. It is great to have you here today, tonight. Perhaps the NFL game of the year, the LA Chargers, nobody's team. San Diego doesn't want him. LA doesn't appear to be interested. Against everybody's new favorite team in the league, Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Joy Taylor is joining me. How are you, Joy?
I'm great. Good morning.
This will be fun tonight.
It is.
We both love the NFL, and this is one of those games over the last month we've been waiting for. Let's now review Patrick Mahomes' two biggest games this year. New England. Man, he was snazzy. Flying all over the place and making throws all over the place, and had two really bad picks and lost. All right. Let's go to his next big game against the Rams. He was throwing that ball all over the place. He was making plays. He had three picks, two fumbles, and lost. Two games, two biggest games, seven turnovers, lost. And I hear nothing but hype, affection, and love. I know he throws no-look passes. Call me nutty. I like my quarterbacks to look where they throw. In both those games, by the way, against Tom Brady and Goff, he had more yards. He had more highlights. He had more touchdown passes. Yet nobody seemed to mention. He was a big part of why they lost. He had seven turnovers. It's interesting that Andrew Luck, who had a GM so bad he was fired and a coach so bad he was fired, and had two Pro Bowlers and went 11-5, 11-5, 11-5, and got to the AFC Championship game where he was overwhelmed in Foxborough. Of course he was. New England had the better team. And all I heard was, hey, throws too many interceptions. That's the worst team that's ever gotten to a conference championship, that 11-5 Colts team. Patrick Mahomes, who I'm not sure is going to get to the AFC Championship, has Andy Reid, who, yes, is going to get probably one Super Bowl, voted to the Hall of Fame, an absolutely ridiculously gifted offensive roster. Eric Berry, by the way, one of the top five athletes in the league, the Gronk stopper, will be coming back for Kansas City tonight. Why is that? Why is Andrew Luck, with no support, a bad GM, a terrible coach, get heat despite amazing win-loss records and accomplishments, and Patrick Mahomes, it's crickets? Why? Because one guy is a headband and another guy is a neckbeard. One guy is fun and flashy. One guy's got a flip phone. One guy's got a little nightclub. One guy has a book club. One guy's cool. One guy's not. One guy's no look. Andrew Luck's always look. That's what we keep doing. Fallen for the flashy. I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes isn't really good. He's not Andrew Luck. He's not Andrew Luck. By the way, Andrew Luck entered the league replacing somebody we all loved, Peyton Manning. We didn't want to like him to begin with. And he went to Stanford. Stanford. Stanford's where rich kids. Stanford, yeah. Replacing Peyton Manning. Y'all, Peyton Manning eats Oreos. And sub sandwiches and drives a Buick. And Patrick Mahomes replaced the likable but incredibly boring Alex Smith, who could never throw for two touchdown passes in a single game. This is what we do. In the big games versus good teams this year, New England, the Rams, and Baltimore last week, Patrick Mahomes has had eight turnovers. Not a word. Andrew Luck took a team with two Pro Bowlers, one of them a kicker. Bad GM, bad coach, running for his life. Really no help in the running game or defense to the AFC Championship. And we just kept crushing him because he threw interceptions. Let me just ask you, if Mahomes tonight loses and he shouldn't. Eric Berry is back. And oh, by the way, the Chargers don't have their top two running backs available, so they're going to be completely one-dimensional. Kansas City should win. They're at home. Biggest game in Kansas City in 20 years. What are we going to say tomorrow on the show? Well, I mean, he is amazing, and he didn't look multiple times, and let's just try to hold everybody to the same level. Andrew Luck, with far less to this point, had done far more. Far more. I do like Kansas City in this game because Kansas City comes in at home. Eric Berry, biggest game in a long time, a ton to play for, and the Chargers don't have a home, are seemingly playing every game on the road, and don't have one of the great running backs in the NFL available or his backup. Let me move to this story. This is interesting. Everybody today is talking about that team, baby dinosaurs. Oh, my God, Canada rocks, doesn't it? Toronto went to Oakland last night and beat the you-know-what out of the Warriors by 20. That is incredible. And here's what's amazing. Serge Ibaka and Kyle Lowry and Danny Green led them. And guess what? Who wasn't there? Kawhi Leonard wasn't there. And he won by 20? That is so bizarre. Oh, actually, it's not bizarre at all. They're 7-1 without Kawhi. And they've won their last six games that Kawhi didn't play. And the San Antonio Spurs made the playoffs when Kawhi Leonard wasn't around. Kawhi Leonard's odd. And in sports and in life, you become your personality. He's one of the strangest players ever. His career averages on assists is bizarre. It's two assists a game. Shaq averaged more assists per game. Shaq, who when you dumped the ball on him, became a human 7'2", 330-pound bulldozer and didn't have teammates. Shaq averaged more assists than Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard doesn't talk, nor does Kawhi Leonard pass. And it is not a coincidence that the two greatest communicators in NBA history, Magic Johnson and LeBron James, are, in my opinion, the two greatest big man passers ever. Probably the two best passers ever. That's not a coincidence. Basketball now is about verbal, communicating, recruiting, leadership. You ever notice that LeBron James, and you kept telling me 3 years ago Kawhi was the next LeBron, he's the opposite of LeBron. He never passes and he never talks. LeBron is incredibly functional. Kawhi is bizarrely dysfunctional. Okay, the laugh creeps me out. Let's move on. But I know he plays good defense, but it's 2018. Does it really matter? How good a defense can you play when you can't hand check, can't put a body on anybody, and it's a cardio game? Odd guys become odd players. And when the Spurs, at Kawhi's peak, they did an analytic on him, and he was only making the team 1.2 points better than when he was off the floor and on the bench. Kawhi is never going to be LeBron. Kawhi doesn't share the same sort of DNA of LeBron. I mean, just think about this. LeBron is as functional a leader as the league has. He's as functional a communicator as the league has. He's as functional a recruiter as the league has. He's as functional a floor general as the NBA has. He has a unique handshake with virtually every star in the league. Kawhi is just simply gifted. He is not a lead dog. Toronto is 7-1 without him, 6-0 in their last six. Spurs made the playoffs without him. He is simply gifted. And in every junior high in America, and in virtually every high school in America, there is a gifted kid. He's a little different. He never dates the cute girl. He's never the quarterback. He's never the most popular. But he's gifted. He's gifted. He is. But gifted is not what the NBA is just about. What separates LeBron and even great talents like Kawhi is the ability to pass and lead and talk and communicate and recruit. That is the NBA today. The connectivity. Steph Curry recruits, talks, funny, verbal, leads. I talked about Kevin Durant yesterday. That's why LeBron and Steph are the two most important players in this league. LeBron's not the most offensively gifted, and Steph's not the most physically gifted. But when I hear Kawhi Leonard's going to be LeBron, he's the opposite of LeBron. Teams often flourish without him. He'll never recruit. He doesn't communicate. He doesn't pass. He is simply, and this is a cool thing too, gifted. But gifted doesn't win rings. Magic does. Steph does. LeBron does. D. Wade does. What do they have in common? They talk. They communicate. They recruit. The Raptors beat the NBA champs by 20 on the road without Kawhi Leonard.
Told you about those baby dinosaurs.
And it's not even strange. This has become their pattern and his pattern. Still don't buy the baby dinosaurs. God, what a disaster that would be for the network that has the NBA if Toronto is in the finals, because Canadian viewers don't count on our ratings. So you'd have to pray that everybody in America falls in love with the baby dinosaurs.
I think people will still watch.
Yeah.
It's going to be the baby dinosaurs versus the Warriors.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's right. If it's the baby dinosaurs against the Warriors, then you got viewers.
Or maybe the Lakers.
I don't think that's going to happen. It'd be fun, but a man can dream. But
be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It is amazing. There are certain places in America that the standards are ridiculously high. The Yankees and the Red Sox, the standards are, just ridiculously high. You can be successful and it's not good enough. Real Madrid in soccer, and the Lakers certainly fall into this category. It's ridiculous. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers have high standards. I mean, they'll keep coaches through bad, bad 4 and 5 year stretches. Dallas Cowboys have standards, but they keep coaches for a long time. Dave Campo held a job for 3 years. I think Barry Switzer was there 3 or 4. Lakers are ridiculous. I want you to think about this for a second. The Lakers are 17-10. They have won 6 of 7, 7 of 10. They're one game out of first in the Great Western Conference. And I've already seen this headline this year. Scouts report LeBron's been ignoring Luke Walton's play calls. Yesterday, Steven Jackson, a guy I love and respect, came on the show and shared an opinion of Luke Walton, which I have heard multiple times from players, mostly off the air. Steven Jackson went on the air with it.
It would be hard for me to play on that team and respect Luke Walton.
Why?
Because I played against him.
What does that mean?
I mean, I don't respect him. He won championships.
If I was on Steve Kerr's coach staff, he got hurt and I coached that team.
Yeah.
Would I be a great coach? He got considered a great coach after that.
I don't think he's a coach for that team. I think LeBron's doing all the coaching over there.
Okay, just think about this. I want you to think for a second what Luke Walton is dealing with, because yesterday Phil Jackson was at the Laker practice facility. And I don't know why Phil Jackson was there. I hope he was there to give Luke Walton support and a pat on the back. I want you to think of this job. Luke Walton coaches the Lakers. Who's now running them? Kobe's agent. Who's the CEO? Magic Johnson. Who owns the team? Phil Jackson's ex-girlfriend. Who's on the team? LeBron James. Who's in the same building helping run the other team? Jerry West. Are you kidding me? This is the toughest job in sports. Any league, any sport. Kobe's agent's running it. Magic's the president. Jeannie Buss, Phil's ex, owns it. Jerry West is in the same building. And LeBron's on the team. 17-10, won 6 of 7, 7 of 10, a game out of first. This is a team. Luke was hired to coach all the puppies, the babies. They just threw LeBron at him. They threw Magic at him. They threw Kobe's agent at him. They threw Jerry West in the same building. He wasn't hired to do all this. Listen, the Lakers chew up even their legends. Think about this. Pat Riley's a legend. He had to step down. Jerry West had to leave. Phil Jackson left twice. Kobe threatened to leave. Shaq left ugly. That's how it works for their legends. Los Angeles is the only city in America. It's the only city in America that has had an NFL and NBA team for 50 years, parts of it. And the NBA team is significantly more popular every time they're in the same town as an NFL team. If you have both, there's only one city in America. What about the Warriors? The Niners were much more popular for about a 30-year stretch. This is different. Think about this. Jerry West was the logo of the league. He's not even the Lakers' best shooting guard ever. Kobe was. If I said to you, who's the Lakers' best center? You'd go, Wilt. He's maybe the best player. No, he's not it. Okay, Shaq. No, he's not it either. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is their best center ever. I mean, the pressure on Luke Walton, what he faces, the standards. Can you imagine taking a job? And the job changes midstream. And you take this job, and all these exes and legends and human statues are now your boss, your boss's boss, your best player, your owner's ex, and working in the same building. This is the toughest job in American sports right now. He's a game out of first. Steven Jackson's like, I don't respect him. I have had multiple NBA sources over the last month say, it's not going to last. And my response is, this isn't good enough? 90% of you were out there saying, LeBron's not going to win 43 games. They're on pace, if you take out the 0-3 start, to win 60. They're on pace to win 60 games if you take out their 0-3 start, which, you know, when you have a new superstar, takes a few games to get it right. And the expectations for this job. I hope Phil Jackson was in town yesterday at the facility just to put his arm around him. This is brutal. Brutal.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
A story yesterday that John Harbaugh, the coach of the Ravens, said, listen, I got to make a decision. I'm staying with Lamar Jackson, and I'm benching Joe Flacco. I'm in the interesting business. The Ravens are much more interesting with Lamar Jackson's style, with Lamar Jackson's bringing juice and energy to the franchise. But, you know, the real story here is not Lamar Jackson. The real story is, folks, we have a cultural revolution going on in football. All five quarterbacks are working that are rookies. Baker Mayfield's had a great month. Lamar Jackson's had a great month. Josh Rosen just won at Lambeau. Sam Darnold's 4-6, had a great Sunday, and has nothing to work with. Josh Allen beat the Vikings in Minnesota, has rushed for 350 yards in the last three games, an NFL record, and may have one of the great arms since Cam broke into this league. All five rookies are playing, and all five rookies have had moments of brilliance. No busts, 5-for-5, that's never happened before. We've got a revolution going on here. College football coaching has never been as good as NFL coaching. So you've got better NFL coaching, and the coaches now are adapting and adopting college offenses. Of the 11 first-round quarterbacks in the last 3 years, 10 of 11 are having an impact in the league. That is unheard of. It used to be first-round quarterbacks were a coin flip, bust or can play. After the first round, it was about 25% could play. All these guys can play. I mean, I always said with Lamar, I would have drafted him, probably second, third round, but I didn't think he was close to ready. He's winning. Baltimore's better with him than they were with Flacco. I didn't think Josh Allen was close to ready. I said, there's a bust here if he plays. There's no bust. Now, he's got no offensive line. They have no receivers. The Jets and the Bills have battle lines and no receivers. And Darnold and Josh Allen look good. And think about this, too. All five rookies can not only play, but the three rookies, first-round quarterback rookies last year, Trubisky, Mahomes, and Watson, will all host playoff games this year. That the MVP this year, Patrick Mahomes, is a first-year starter. This is unheard of. It just doesn't work this way in the NFL. But between quarterbacks, in my opinion, are better today because of all the 7-on-7 camps that started about 20 years ago, and this is the first generation of quarterbacks and kids who were in these 7-on-7 camps. I think that's some of it. I also think very good NFL coaches are not being rigid and stubborn. They're adapting and saying, we're going to use some of these offensive principles in college. But it's a great sign for the league. It is a great sign for the NFL that the bust rate, 10 of 11 of the last first-round quarterbacks are working, are hosting playoff games, are showing great promise. A couple, I think, can be a star. Wow.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff from the 3-N-Out podcast, brought to you by Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. If you like Colin's show, you will like mine. I talk all football. Coming up on this week's show, Kirk Cousins, is he good or not? Brady, Mahomes, Amari thriving, Reggie McKenzie fired. There is a lot going on in the NFL world, and we talk it all. Again, the 3-N-Out podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast, with me, John Middlecoff.
And with that, we go to Greg Cosell, 30-plus years at NFL Films. Speaking of a little bit of a revolution, the Dallas Cowboys add Amari Cooper. And, Greg, I like the move. I would have preferred giving away a second-rounder for him, not a first-rounder. But I'm not going to lie. His resurgence to the offense has surprised me. Has it surprised you?
A little, but not a ton. Can I just say one thing about what you were talking about earlier?
Sure.
I think one of the things that's helping so many of these quarterbacks, it's not 100%, but it's true in many cases, is the changing nature of NFL passing games. You'll notice that completion percentages are way up.
Yep.
And one reason for that is many more short passes. And what short passes mean is less reading, because people always thought years and years ago that quarterbacks coming into the league would struggle to understand and read NFL defenses. And it would take them time to do that. And they would struggle in the pocket. Now, when you talk about three-step drop or quick five-step drop, that doesn't really require reading in the same way. The reads and throws are defined.
Yeah.
So it's much, relatively easier. I don't want to say it's easy because it never is, but it's relatively easier. So you're seeing much higher completion percentages for almost all quarterbacks.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. Go ahead.
Amari Cooper. We've talked about this before, Colin. I think one of the things that with the Dallas Cowboys, and they've been this way for a number of years under Scott Linehan, is there's been a lot of individual routes, isolation routes, and by that I mean they ask their receivers to win one-on-one. If you don't have those kinds of receivers, the pass game can get a little difficult. And when you combine that with a quarterback in Dak Prescott who's not consistently accurate, that makes for a tough mix. So now what you have is a receiver in Amari Cooper who can win one-on-one. And very often on shorter routes, things like slants, in-breakers, quick out routes, he wins quickly because he's so good off the line of scrimmage. So that presents the throws for Dak Prescott. But one thing you can't argue with is how good they've been on third down the last 5 weeks. The last five, I guess they won five in a row. The last 5 weeks, they're 50% conversion on third down.
Wow.
And that's outstanding.
Yeah, that's a remarkable number. So the Rams, and I've watched every snap this year. I said it about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Whether the league is caught up to McVay, Cooper Kupp's injury, offensive line not quite getting the push, Goff's a little less consistent. Rams aren't the same team today as they were 5 or 6 weeks ago on offense. What does it mean? What does the film say?
Well, I think there's been a couple things involved. Number one, I think for the last 5 or 6 weeks, I don't think Jared Goff has been as consistently sharp. I think he's missed some throws that in the first 5 or 6 weeks he made with his eyes closed. So I think he's been not quite as sharp. I think what happened is you had the perfect negative storm against Chicago. You had a quarterback who was not particularly sharp. You had, for whatever reason, McVay not really calling as many runs as he normally does. And you had a defense in the Bears defense that really blurs the lines between man and zone and makes it very difficult for a quarterback. And keep in mind, he's still a young quarterback. It makes it very difficult for a quarterback to get clear, defined reads early in the down. And Goff at his core, Colin, at his core is a rhythm player.
Yeah.
He's not a late in the down quarterback. He's not a mover. It needs to be presented to him by the design of the pass game. And McVay's great at that, but when that can't happen and the defense takes that away, Goff will become a little unsettled and play unevenly, and that's exactly what happened against Chicago.
Yeah, not going to face many defenses as good as Chicago. It should, should also be noted there. Now, here's a team that interests me. I think Pete Carroll's done a great job to kind of reboot this offense. The Seahawks are averaging, over the last 5 weeks, 30 points a game. And it, and it feels very much old school. Are they a dangerous team to you offensively? Now, or is it just, you know, this year the catch rule's in? They didn't have Doug Baldwin the other night, so they were really choppy. What do you see with their offense?
Well, I think we're waiting to see Larry Zonka in this offense. To be honest with you, I think that when you look at what they do offensively, think about this in today's NFL. They play with a sixth offensive lineman on 25% of their snaps. Think about that for a minute, Colin. One quarter of their snaps, they have six offensive linemen on the field. In the game against Minnesota Monday night, 38 of their 64 snaps had six offensive linemen.
Wow. That is old school.
That is really old school. Chris Carson had 22 runs. 19 of them had six offensive linemen. So they are choosing to play this way, to line up, be physical, have the pass game clearly work off the run game. Obviously, the pass game on Monday night was not very good, but it was really the first time this year it was not very good. Their big pass plays tend to come off play action, even with six offensive linemen on the field. So that's the way they've chosen to play. It's very interesting. I'd love, and we'll never know exactly why other than what Pete says publicly, but I'd love to know why they've chosen to do that, because that's normally the way you play when you don't feel your quarterback is good enough. So I'm very intrigued as to why they're playing this way.
Yeah. It's an interesting team. Bobby Wagner, by the way, is spearheading a very young group of defensive players, and they're playing their butts off.
They sure are.
Yeah. So the Saints were on fire in the last couple of weeks. Little bit of a pullback. Anything,
sure.
Anything to be alarmed about if you were a Saints fan?
Alarmed may be too strong, but I think there's some issues, and I think it starts, quite honestly, with the talent level, because think about their pass game. They've got Michael Thomas, very good player at what he does, okay? But he's not a vertical dimension. You've got Kamara, a really dangerous weapon in the pass game. Beyond that, there's no one else in their pass game that a defense worries about as an individual. So that helps a defense in defending them. And the second point is their run game this year has never reached the level that it did a year ago with
Aaron
and Kamara.
That's right.
Kamara has only one run all season of 20 yards.
That's a real, you know, that's a really interesting number. So, you know, we talk about this all the time. You see Le'Veon Bell as a home run back, but Le'Veon Bell wasn't as big a back as James Conner's over 20 yards. The perception is, oh, this run game for the Saints, Kamara, it's not a big play run game this year.
Not this year. No. So keep in mind that over the last three games, Breeze has only thrown for 200 yards once. They only have six pass plays of 20 or more yards in the last three games. So the offense has become a little bit condensed. And when that happens, it's a burden to have to go 12, 13, 14 plays to score. Now, are they capable of doing that? Yes, they are. But it's harder to do in the NFL.
All right. Baker Mayfield gets his offensive coordinator and his coach fired. They bring in Freddie Kitchens, the offensive coordinator, and clearly over the last month, now they haven't played in many instances the best defenses, Cincinnati and Atlanta, but Baker's playing with a ton of confidence. He threw the deep ball especially well this weekend. What are they doing schematically, or Freddie Kitchens, that has given him a real bump in confidence? I mean, he really looks like he feels good about the way he's playing right now.
Well, they put him in a situation where he can play to what his strength is. He's a quick twitch kid. So you get him in a situation where he can hit that back foot, get the ball out, play fast, and they're doing that really, really well. But I think the trait that shows up every week, and this plays anywhere, Colin, you play quarterback, is precise ball placement. His accuracy is big time. And you saw that in college. He was a very accurate thrower. That's a defining feature of his play. And he beat tight coverage this past week several times with really good throws. And at the end of the day, if you're a really accurate passer, you're going to be able to play in this league. You know, I remember Troy Aikman telling me years ago that you could do everything right as a quarterback, Colin, but if you can't put the ball where you want to, you have nothing.
Yeah. You know, I said before the draft, and I said it over and over, Joy, you were here listening, I said, he is too accurate not to work in this league. I don't like his off-field nonsense, some of his ego. I wish he was a little bigger and a little more athletic. But his accuracy in college jumped off the chart. Like, he threw a – people compared him to Johnny Manziel. Significantly better arm and better placement than Johnny Manziel. I didn't think they were even remotely, you know, comparable players. No, I think you're right. Now, I want to talk a little bit about a team that's played Baker twice, the Steelers. I think they're in trouble here. Now, I don't like all their noise. But right now, Greg, they have no running game.
None.
We're going into the coldest part of the year. The Saints' running game may not be as good as we perceive. Pittsburgh's got no running game right now. I mean, to me, they can't beat New England this weekend like that.
No, there's many elements to that game. We don't have time to get into all of it, but to respond to your point, they've lost three in a row. They've been 75% pass and 25% run. You can't play like that. And their pass game is very much individual-based. It relies on the quality of the quarterback and the receivers, and then it revolves around the quarterback making second reaction plays, leaving the pocket, being improvisational. Very difficult to build a pass game around that, so there's no rhythm to their offense at all. It becomes an individual play offense, and sometimes you can make those plays and sometimes you can't.
By the way, in that Raider game, just as an aside,
yeah,
do the Raiders look well coached? Because I do think Gruden knows a lot about offensive football. Is there anything you've watched on the Raiders in that game maybe and said, yeah, the Raiders kind of know what they're doing sometimes?
I thought this particular week, first of all, I thought Derek Carr played his best game of the year, but I thought that Gruden helped him tremendously with the game plan approach and the play calling.
Okay.
There was a ton of quick game concepts, defined throws. Carr was really precise. Carr's always struggled with his lower body mechanics, and when he's in the pocket too long, that really shows up. You want him to be in a situation where he can hit the back foot and deliver the football.
Yeah, because he's a good thrower of the football when the play sets up for him.
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, every quarterback should be, but he is definitely one of those guys.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes, 7 turnovers against the Patriots-Rams combined. If you add Baltimore, it's 8 in his 3 biggest games of the year. People fell in love with a no-look pass, but I think he's become exactly what we thought he would be. Wildly talented, fun, crazy, with a great play designer in Andy Reid. But I do worry about his sloppiness. Do you?
A little bit. I mean, keep in mind that obviously he made that fourth down throw last week, and that was a phenomenal throw, but they had 17 points up to that point. I'm anxious to see as he continues to go forward. You hit it right on the head. I really can't add to that as far as the talent level, but I think that was a concern. I remember speaking to a lot of coaches at the Combine the year he came out, and there were many who were concerned about the way in which he played. They all recognized the talent, but there was a concern about whether he would fit into a structured offense play after play week after week. Obviously, the numbers this year are phenomenal, inarguable, but we'll see over time.
And finally, your big play. This warms my heart.
I did it just for you, Colin.
He's the best since John Elway. He's the best quarterback prospect I'd seen come out of college, injuries aside and coach aside, but it's Andrew Luck. Fire away.
Yeah, he's pretty good, by the way, and he's having a really good season. Let's start this play. This was a 60-yard completion to T.Y. Hilton. But there's some really cool elements to this play, and it starts with the personnel they had on the field. They had 6 offensive linemen on the field. Joe Haig's the 6th, and Haig and Ewart are both going to stay into pass protect. So what you have now is what we call twins to the other side of the field. And T.Y. Hilton is the receiver to watch. But the defense here, the Texans, they're in cover 4 across coverage. What this does with your alignment is it gets T.Y. Hilton running a deep vertical route against a safety, just what you want. But now what happens here as he runs this vertical route against a safety is Tyrann Mathieu, the other safety, because no one's threatening him in quarters, he looks back inside as he should. But Hilton runs a great route. He stems outside, and as soon as he does that, Mathieu figures, I'm done. He's not going inside, so I'll look back inside at Luck. But now what happens is Hilton comes back inside on the deep post, and it's complete. It's a great throw, too. But you can really see it from this angle with T.Y. Hilton, how he stems the route outside, the details and nuance of route running. This is critical. Look at him right here, stem outside. That takes Matthew off him and now gets your speed receiver
yep.
running vertically against a safety, which every team would want.
And by
Hilton
the way,
is one of the best.
And all those extra offensive linemen gives you the appearance that they're going to power run it to the right.
Correct.
They fake it, hold the linebackers, and it's actually, for Luck, a very easy throw.
Yep, you get 7-man pass protection, which, again, secures him in the pocket because you're taking a deep shot because you want to make sure he has time in the pocket and he's not under duress.
Great stuff, Greg. Thanks. Nice talking to you.
Thanks, Colin.
Greg Jennings also will join us today. That just warmed my heart right there. That may have been the greatest play on film ever, ever in the history of the show.
Man, you love you some Andrew Luck.
Neckbeard, flip phone, book club, kind of a nerd. It's like I watch myself play. He's a big, gigantic nerd.
Except for you can't grow a beard.
I can't grow anything. Lord.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I just saw this story. This is the worst idea ever. I'm trying to keep a straight face with this. Brett Favre would be intrigued by a Packers coaching offer.
Oh, no, that's on the Onion.
It's not on the Onion. It should be on the Onion. Can you imagine
if you're
Aaron Rodgers waking up? That would be his personal hell. But let me tell you something, folks. Here's what coaching needs. Discipline, details, film study, adapting, and practice. Brett wasn't good at any of those. The two greatest players of my life who would make the two worst coaches are Charles Barkley and Brett Favre. They are two of the greatest players I've seen in my life. But Favre wasn't disciplined. He wasn't always coachable. He was incredibly stubborn. Schematics were second to ad-libbing. Film study was optional. And he was liked to practice as long as practice went short or went his way. Charles Barkley, similarly, a terrible practice player. Not really into the details. Sort of screwing off. Defense was optional. Schematics, same thing. Like, this is a terrible idea.
I disagree. I think it's a marvelous idea.
Well, it'd be a complete great story for us.
I root for chaos. This is a great idea. Packers, do it.
It would be 0-16 with Aaron Rodgers. They wouldn't win a single game. By the way, Brett Favre would hate coaching Brett Favre. Charles Barkley would hate coaching Charles Barkley. But there, by the way, Barkley's one of the 10, I've said it before, he's one of the 10 best basketball players I've ever seen. Barkley was unbelievable in his prime, and he's the best basketball broadcaster analyst I've ever seen. He'd be a terrible. And if Charles is watching, I'm sure he's not, you'd be a terrible head coach. And if he ever says he'd be a good head coach, Shaq and Kenny Smith and Ernie Johnson need to stop and say, Chuck, you'd be a terrible head coach.
Well, Favre told us the TMZ Sports. He said, believe me, it's not going to happen, but how can you not be intrigued by that? Oh, this is the best story I've ever heard. This is so good.
What do the wise guys wear? I get asked that from time to time. The answer is, the new gear from the HerdNow.com merchandise store. We are now officially open for business. We have all the apparel diehard Herd fans need to represent the show. Go to theherdnow.com. If you don't, that's a you problem. And that's a you problem is one of our shirts. Check it out. Theherdnow.com. Theherdnow.com store is open for business today.